Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddham Dhammam Sangham Namassami. Tonight I'd like to talk about coming to terms with our shadow. The term shadow is just a description, just a way of pointing to something. And what it points to is our unacknowledged, unexpressed fears and hopes, our dreams, our disappointments, our wishes, our anxieties. The states of mind which lurk just out of our conscious awareness, but which follow us around in our daily life and also which follow us to the meditation. They express themselves very often in the thoughts which arise, such as when we, for example, see a happy family and we feel depressed, because maybe we don't have a happy family, or we had a happy family and we got divorced, or we broke up. So when we see a happy family instead of seeing happiness, we feel depressed. Or it expresses itself in the situation where we hear of someone's success and we react with some sort of comment, some sort of sarcastic remark. How did they buy that success? What price did they have to pay? Or we mean to make a joke about something and it comes out as some sort of biting remark which points to our bitterness in that situation. It's no joke at all. Or it expresses itself in our compulsive behaviour, the things that we get up to in particular situations to help us feel at ease. So reaching for food, or reaching for noise, reaching for television and distraction the moment we're alone, because we feel lonely when there's no one else around. It's not always things that we've done which are bad, which haunt us. Maybe it's worries, the unspoken fears we have about losing the ones that we love most. Someone that we care about gets a terrific promotion and moves away, and our first reaction is that it's painful. We feel unsafe because they're moving out of our direct orbit instead of being able to rejoice in their success. So all of us have a shadow that follows us around, and we all have a different colour shadow according to the experiences that we've had in our life and how well we've been able to work with them. And the thing about the shadow is not that it's so difficult to see, not so difficult to spot, but we don't like to see it. In fact, we try to avoid seeing it. And in this culture, there is tremendous importance given to being able to avoid discomfort, to move away from anything that causes us difficulty. So we have all sorts of ways of distracting ourselves, of making ourselves feel good by taking the right pill or going to the right place, putting on the right music. All of those sorts of things are ways of avoiding putting the spotlight on the shadow. And some of us even come to meditation with the idea that meditation is going to be the way to help us move away from our discomfort, move away from our stress, make us feel more relaxed, more peaceful. And meditation does have that ability to make us feel more relaxed. But as we start to practice and we develop the ability to make the mind more peaceful, we start to remove the surface clutter of the mind, the debris that's very clearly there. And very often we come across a deeper level of our experience, and what we find there is not what we want to see, because we start to open up to a deeper level of our life. We start to open up to our shadow. And if we come to meditation with the idea that it's meant to make us calm and peaceful and happier, then very often we don't like what we see and we don't like the effect of the meditation. There's a saying in the Sufi tradition, "My mind is not to my mind's liking. I wish I knew how to unite the two, my mind and my mind's liking." And when we start to see what's in our mind, very often we stop meditating. We don't like what we see sometimes. It's too painful, too disturbing to come face to face with ourselves. And sometimes we even think that there must be something wrong with how we're meditating, because meditation's meant to make me happy and calm, and it's not doing that at all. It did at the beginning, but now it's bringing up some painful things, some things that I don't want to see in myself. And so what I want to emphasise to all of you tonight is that this is the natural progress in meditation, that as we clear away the surface debris and come in contact with ourselves at a deeper level, then it's quite natural that we will come in contact with things that we may consider to be too painful, too unpleasant, and mistakes. Because all of us have this shadow because of just being a human being. And in fact, in Buddhism, in Buddhist practice, it goes in the opposite direction to the worldly way, which always tries to remove us from what is uncomfortable, help us to move away from discomfort. In Buddhism, we actually move towards what is uncomfortable, what is difficult, to bring it into our full awareness, so that in the light of full awareness, we can start to understand it at a deeper level, and understand it at a level that allows us to let go of what it is that we're holding on to. All of those things that we're holding on to are obstructions to clear seeing. But it's important that we understand in what way we are to move towards these difficulties. Because if we don't have the right orientation to them, then we can make our meditation just another one of the struggles in our life. So it's very important that we do our work with right intention. Right intention, which is the second aspect of the Noble Eightfold Path, and is based on wisdom. And I'd like to read to you what the Buddha said about right intention, because this gives us a very clear guideline on how we are to work with our shadow. The Buddha said, "These three types of thought cause blindness, loss of vision, and ignorance. They put an end to wisdom, are associated with trouble, and do not conduce to nibbana. What three? Thoughts of greed, hatred, and harming. These three types of thought give vision, insight, and knowledge. They increase wisdom, are associated with harmony and conduce to nirvana? What three? Thoughts of giving up, thoughts of loving kindness, and thoughts of helping. So it's important for us to understand that as we move towards these difficulties, these shadowy areas of our experience, that we're not moving towards them in order to annihilate them, to do violence to them. Because this is going in the completely opposite direction to the way of the Dharma, the Buddha's teachings. What we're doing is moving towards them with loving kindness and acceptance, and working towards letting them go, working towards being free of them, not by annihilating them, but by giving them up. And there's a big difference in that. And it points to one of the very important aspects of all the practice that we do in Buddhism. And that is that it's a twofold process to do this work. We have to build up the strength and clarity of the mind to be able to do the work, as well as letting go of what is unwholesome, what is not helpful to us. If we come to meditation and we only want to find calm and peace and happiness, then we run the risk of just putting a very pleasant cover over what is really there in our mind, in our experience of life. Just covering up in the way that we use an air freshener to smother the bad odours in our house. The odours are still there, but we pretend they're not by covering them up with a sweet smell. But unless we develop the positive qualities of mind, we won't have sufficient strength of mind and sufficient clarity of mind to know what work we need to do and to be able to do that work without being disheartened or disappointed and without cringing when we see what we have to work with. So it's very important for us when we are thinking about our meditation practice and working with our shadow that we understand it's not just what we do in the meditation that makes it possible for us to do the work. We have to address the whole of our life, because the support that we need for our mind comes from the way we live the whole of our life. So the first thing we need to address is our sila, our morality. The way we act in the world when we're not sitting on the cushion. Because even at the very basic level of keeping the precepts, when we start to reflect on them, we understand that it's not only a matter of refraining from harming living beings, for example, but it's also a matter of cultivating loving kindness. It's not only a matter of refraining from taking what is not given, but it's also a matter of cultivating generosity. And all of the precepts have these two aspects of restraint and cultivation. But especially the first two precepts, if we just work with those and try to bring them to life in our own life, then we'll find that they give us tremendous strength of mind and happiness of heart that will give us the power to face our demons. Because all of our shadows only have power because we refuse or are afraid to look at them. When we turn the spotlight of awareness onto them, it's no longer a shadow. And that's a very important thing to remember. If we live a life of integrity, keeping the precepts and trying to cultivate wholesome qualities, then we develop tremendous self-respect, which gives us an inner confidence, an inner buoyancy. And that self-respect in itself will be a great support for the work that we have to do. Because when we know that we're doing the best we can, we won't be so disheartened by the difficulties that we encounter. And also because we're starting to be more at ease with ourselves, we won't try to get a stranglehold on any of the good things that come along, because we're not so desperate anymore for the good times to make us feel all right. So we have much more of an even mindedness towards our life when we cultivate the self-respect and make it a support for us in our practice. And then when we come to the meditation, that self-respect is also a support for us in the work that we need to do. Developing generosity is very important, and it's very often underestimated by people, especially when they come to the Buddhist tradition from another culture. They don't have the influence of their cultural background, which emphasises giving up and generosity. Of course, when you reflect on what generosity is, it's based on being able to give up what we would like to have for ourselves, being able to give up things which we would use for ourselves, being able to share with others as required, and sometimes even to let go of things that we consider to be very precious and important to us. And just practicing generosity starts to open our heart, not only to give, but also to receive. And if you just think of it in a non-verbal way, when we give, we're opening up, we're giving out, and we're also opening up to receive, goodness as well. And one of the things that we need to be able to do in this practice is to give up, to let go of things that we consider to be very precious, to let go of past hurts, for example, which we hang on to as being so important to my self-image of how my life has been, of what life has done to me, or what other people have done to me. So to be able to give up something that we think is so important requires open-heartedness, requires generosity at a very profound level. Loving kindness is the ability to give unconditional love, unconditional kindness to those that we come in contact with. It's about not expecting anything in return for the love that we give, and not giving it just to a select group of people, giving it universally as it's required. And when we start to look at our shadow, there'll certainly be things there that we don't like. So instead of saying, well, I'll only work with the things that I like, I won't look at the things that I don't like, we're now saying, no, I'm prepared to look at everything, to go from just a particular kind of thing to the universal. Everything that's there, I'm willing to look at. With no expectation, no conditions, just working with what's there. Being able to look with detachment as a witness to what we see, rather than getting pulled into it emotionally because we want to get a particular result out of it. And this is what loving kindness is about. So when we deliberately cultivate loving kindness, it opens our heart to other people, but it also opens our heart to ourselves and to those aspects of ourselves that we wish we didn't have, that we'd rather not be in contact with. And rather than selecting out just the good parts of me, we're willing to embrace the whole of our experience. So these things, self-respect through living a life of integrity, practicing and developing the open-heartedness of generosity, to give up, to let go, and then the strong, resilient, buoyant heart of loving kindness, which can receive all things equally. These are tremendous supports for doing the work in the meditation. Now, how do we work with these things when we contact them in the meditation? Now, as I said at the beginning, it's not hard to spot our shadow. It's always popping up. Basically, we don't want to see it, and that's why it seems to avoid us. So it may present itself just in restlessness, in not being able to settle in the meditation at all. It's like there's a thorn on the cushion, and you just can't get comfortable with that thorn pressing into you, no matter how you shift and no matter how you try to settle. And that thorn is perhaps a memory from the past, maybe something that we've done that we've regretted doing, or maybe something that we wish would happen and we're very anxious that it may not happen, and so we can't settle. So if it presents in that way, the way that we usually cope with it is to move, not to sit still, to allow that restlessness to direct us. So the thing to do when restlessness is very strong at the beginning of the meditation is to make the determination to sit very still. Because if we move away, we miss seeing what we're moving away from. And you can see it's very difficult to make that determination unless we already have these other supports helping us. The support of loving kindness, of generosity, of self-respect. Sometimes we encounter our shadow when we have been meditating quite nicely for some time, and the mind is quite peaceful and calm, and then we come to a point in the meditation where we just all of a sudden get very irritated and feel we can't keep on sitting for a moment longer. And very often the same thing is happening. Something from a deeper level of the mind is starting to reveal itself. And in our habitual way, we want to move away from that discomfort. So once again, we have to make the determination to sit still, patiently, so that we can see what we're trying to move away from. To sit still, patiently, with loving kindness and acceptance, is a very deep listening to our own experience. And it's not a matter of thinking that we have to find a solution. We have to be able to do something with what we are listening to. The listening itself, the opening up to that shadow, is what we need to do. And how do we open up to it? Very often, when our shadow starts to present itself, it presents itself as a memory of a particular event with a very strong storyline that we can remember. We can see it like a movie. We can go back over the script and remember what they said or what we said or what we did. We can see it. But we also feel it. We feel it as physical sensations within this body. We feel it as an underlying emotion that's just below the surface of the storyline. And that's where we have to be able to focus our attention, to the underlying feeling and to the physical manifestation of it. Because if we just pay attention to the storyline, then it's like running an old movie. We already know how the story ends. We've played it over many times before. And it always comes out the way that we have experienced it previously. So we're not really learning anything from it. To learn from it, we have to go below the surface to the underlying feeling, because that's what we're really afraid of looking at. That's why it's the shadow. We have to come in direct contact with the emotions and, as they express themselves, the physical feelings. So it means sitting very often with something that is unpleasant. What is the feeling of sadness? What is the feeling of anger? What is the feeling of disappointment? What is the feeling of desire? Not the story, but the feeling of it. The physical feelings in the body. The emotion that's there. Can we identify it beyond, above the story that's running itself out. What is the emotion that's under there? And can I sit with it? And that's what we need to do. Just to be with it, to listen deeply to that experience. And we may need to do it over and over again, many, many times, because many of our experiences, the ones that we don't want to come in contact with, will be very powerful in our consciousness, will carry a weight, a strength, which we can't remove or let go of just by looking at it once. So we have to know our limitations, the strength of mind that we have to deal with this particular thing. And maybe we say, well, I can sit with it for a minute and that's all I can do. And then I put it down. And then I go back to the breath. Or then I give myself loving kindness deliberately or whatever. And then we may come back to it again, not deliberately bringing it up, but allowing it to arise. And we can sit with it for a minute and a half next time without moving away. And so gradually we allow this past experience, which we're carrying with us, to use up its fuel, use up its energy. We don't have to do anything else with it. We don't have to solve the problem. We just have to bring it into our conscious awareness and allow it to use up its energy and pass away. When we do this practice, we're not just trying to make ourselves feel more comfortable with our life or feel more comfortable with the sort of person that we are. Because once we are able to observe the content of our experience and move away from the storyline to the underlying emotions and to the physical feelings, we take the heat out of that experience. And once we've taken the heat out of that experience and we have a calm, strong mind, then we can start to again look at that experience, but with wisdom. Instead of just looking at the content of the experience, the storyline, we can start to observe the conditions that brought that experience into life. We can start to see the process by which our life is created. In Buddhism, this is called codependent arising. The Buddha said that nothing in this world exists independently and comes into being just on its own. It comes into being through a myriad of causes and conditions which allow it to come into life, which support its continuation, and when those conditions change or are modified, then the result also changes and is modified. And eventually, when those conditions change in a very drastic way, that whole experience passes away. When we have a little bit of distance on our life experience, then we can start to observe with even more detachment the conditions and the causes that gave rise to our particular experiences. And the shadow experiences are very helpful, especially because they carry with them such a sting. It's things that we really need to deal with. They're sort of juicy things to pay attention to. But when we can stand back from them, we can start to observe what gave them life. What kept them going? Why I reacted the way I did? I'm also a conditioned phenomenon. So what factors were playing themselves out in my life at that time, or had been playing themselves out in my life to produce the sort of person I was at that time, with the sort of understanding of life that I had at that time, with the sort of habitual tendencies, ways of reacting in situations that I had at that time in my life? So we can start to unravel that experience and look beyond just how it was for me to see the causes and conditions, to see the processes. And then we might even be able to move from my own personal experience to recognize that this is a universal phenomenon. Because as I look at each of my experiences, I see that none of them have any solidity. None of the experiences that I have can be separated from the conditions which bring them into being. That's true of my past experiences, and I can see it even in my life right now. How many things affect the way I feel? How many things affect the way I react to a situation? And as I start to observe with detachment, I can see this lack of solidity and the fact that there isn't anything in me that is separate from the conditions that are playing themselves out at any time. So if it's this way for me, then perhaps it's this way for everyone. This isn't just a personal thing, this is a universal experience. And that can help us to soften our heart to those people who in the past we've seen as our problems, as our enemies, as the ones who caused me pain or disappointed me, or the ones that I'm trying to control right now, make sure nothing happens to them, make sure they be the way that I want them to be. Because I start to understand that they too are subject to all these conditions. And if they were mean and cruel, if they were greedy and jealous, then they too were the product of so many causes and conditions operating at that time. This doesn't mean that we're all absolved of any responsibility for what we've done in the past or what we do now. And this is why it's so important to have our sila as our protection, as our guard. Because now we are deliberately trying to live a life of integrity, trying to cultivate harmlessness, generosity, honesty. And so even if we recognise that particular conditions are playing themselves out in our life, we have a guideline of how we aspire to behave, how we aspire to live our life. So we don't just follow those causes and conditions and allow them to be however they are. We have a guideline. But when we look back at the past of how we've behaved, we can now start to look with more compassion if we've done things which have been harmful to ourselves and others. Perhaps we can now start to see our foolishness. And there's a very important difference in Buddhism between a feeling of guilt and a feeling of remorse. Guilt is considered to be an unwholesome state of mind because it's founded on self-hatred. And when we look at something that we've done in the past that we regret, very often we don't really want to look deeply at it. It's sort of like the scab over a wound. It just covers it up but doesn't really heal it. There's still a lot of unhealthiness underneath the scab. And so when we look with self-hatred and guilt, we tend to say, make sort of blanket statements about ourselves as, oh, I was a hopeless case. Or I'm terrible because I did that and I can never forgive myself. And we dismiss it without really looking at it and accepting the hurt that we've done. Without looking to see what we can learn from what we've done. Remorse, on the other hand, is the willingness to experience the pain that we have created or caused in the situation that we're looking at. So just what I've been saying, when a thought comes up of something that you've done in the past that's been unskillful, if there's only self-hatred, then we gloss over it. We can't bear to look at it. And so we continue to carry it with us. But with remorse, we now are willing to look at it honestly and to experience the hurt, the painful feelings that arise with that memory. And to acknowledge honestly what we've done in that situation and to make whatever amends we can for that unskillful action, to make the determination to learn from it, not to repeat it. And if we come in contact with something that we find too difficult to bear on our own, one of the skillful things that we can do is to go to someone that we trust, that we have confidence in, and tell them about it. Really own up to it. Owning up to it, not in order to cause ourselves further pain, to flagellate ourselves, but to honestly acknowledge and accept what we've done. To put it down. But if it's been something that's been very hurtful, we may need to do that a number of times before we can fully forgive ourselves. And when we recognise the pain that our actions have caused to ourselves and others, this brings home the fact to us that we can never harm another person without also harming ourselves. It brings home very strongly to us our interconnection with all other forms of life, so that for our own sake we don't harm other beings, because we recognise it causes us tremendous pain, and we may not have not acknowledged that in the past, but if we come fully in contact with painful feelings arising from something that we've done that's been unskillful, then we can fully acknowledge our connection with other beings and also open up with compassion to those that we see who still haven't learnt that lesson, who still act out of ignorance, to harm themselves and to harm other people. So to develop this understanding of our own life, our own experience, to bring our shadow into the full light of our attention with a loving and peaceful heart, that helps us to develop compassion towards ourselves, and it helps us to develop compassion towards other people. If we refuse to acknowledge the suffering in our own life, then it's very hard to admit the suffering of other people. If we can't admit our own frailty, then it's very difficult to be tolerant and accepting of other people. So this work that we do is not only for our own benefit, but it's for the benefit of everyone that we come in contact with. But it's important to recognise that I'm not just talking about the sort of goals that psychotherapy has. It's not just about making a bigger and better me. Once we have brought our shadow into the open, it's then moving beyond our personal experience to develop insight into the process by which our experience is created, and to look more and more deeply at how our experience comes to be, especially in the light of codependent arising, in terms of causes and conditions. Because as we do that at a deeper and deeper level with past experiences, we're able to live our life in the present moment from that wisdom. And then we're no longer stuck in old reactions. We're much more flexible, we're much more open. And we start to get a glimpse of the Buddha's teaching of non-self, that there isn't any solid core to our experience or to the experiencer. It's all arising and passing away, affected by causes and conditions, and subject to change. And sometimes we can have the causes and conditions to produce a result that we like, and sometimes we can't. And this is part of letting go. Part of letting go and also attending to our life with loving kindness and generosity. Because part of the open-heartedness of generosity is to see that we can survive even when we give up the things that we like. We can survive even if we don't have them anymore. That's a wonderful freedom. And then the loving kindness, which helps us to be buoyant and resilient even when we don't get things the way we want. We don't have people the way we want them to be. So we have these tremendous supports for living our life in the present moment with joy and ease. And so this is why it's important to bring these shadow aspects of our life into our conscious awareness, not to feel that the meditation is failing when we start to look into our mind and see things we don't like, but to actually be happy that now we're going to a deeper level of our experience and that we have the equipment to deal with these things, not only through letting go, but also building up the heart, building up the mind and making it strong and clear so that we can do the work. And as we do the work, knowing our limitations, not feeling that we have to struggle and strain to get rid of these things, but to work in a very gentle and kind way with whatever is arising, knowing our limitations and constantly going back to the peaceful states of mind that we can cultivate through paying attention to the breath and through actively cultivating loving kindness and compassion towards ourselves. So this is the teaching which I'd like to give this evening, and if any of you have any questions, you're very welcome to ask them. Pauline, Carol's just asking a question first. Yes, Carol. The question is it better to sit down and deliberately reflect on particular situations in one's life, or is it better to wait until it comes up on its own in meditation? And this is a very good question, because both approaches have their place. And what I said about being able to, first of all, deal with the content, to move beyond the storyline, so that you can be with the actual experience of whatever is there, so that you take the fire out of that experience. Then with that more detached witnessing sort of mind, then it can be very useful to deliberately bring experiences up into your awareness and look at them with that cool heart. But it's important that you've already done the work of taking out some of the fire. Because if you just look at things with the mind in its ordinary state, or without having really taken a deep look at that experience, you'll just replay the old tapes. And that's where we can get stuck. And that's where the difference is between the Buddhist approach, say, and some psychotherapies, which just go through at the old level of what happened and what they said and who did this. We're trying to extend our compassion to all of us. We've all done unskillful things, and so if we're just trying to look for the person who's to blame for the situation, we just rerun the movie. But we're trying to look beyond that to see that we're all subject to these causes and conditions. So with the cool heart, we can very profitably look at those experiences and learn from them and start to see beyond just what we got out of that or how it was for us. One of the signs of growing up, I think, is that as a child, to be able to see your parents as human beings rather than just as parents who did this to you or did that or didn't give you this or gave you that or whatever. But when you're still caught in that very narrow parent-child relationship, very often you don't acknowledge that your parents are human beings and have all sorts of influences and difficulties to work with in your life that perhaps as a child you weren't even aware of. And as you grow up and you start to live your own life and maybe have children of your own, you realise it's not so easy to be perfect and to make the right decision. And we do make the wrong decision sometimes, and sometimes what we do does create unhappiness in the family. And so as we develop and mature, we start to see our parents as people rather than just in their role as parents. So this is the sort of detachment that we develop. It doesn't mean that we change the experience itself. It's still got a sting, but then we start to see it in a different light. When we see it in a different light, then the sting starts to go. And the other important aspect is to keep building up these positive qualities of mind so that there is this buoyancy and resilience which allows us to have the strength of mind to receive these things into our conscious experience without just being overwhelmed by them, or without sort of flinching every time we look at them, so we never actually can really pay attention, sort of looking away as soon as we see it. Does that answer your question? Pauline? Ah, the same question. Yes. So we have to be careful not to overwhelm ourselves, to sort of think we've got to go looking for things, because we've all experienced, I'm sure, that as we try to sit peacefully and calmly, that memories do come up. They might be, this is a very important point, they might be pleasant memories that we are going over, and we're longing for that same experience again. And so it's not just the shadow that is the unpleasant things, it's the pleasant as well. Because what we have to experience is that our pleasant experiences also have no solidity. They don't belong to us. We can't grasp onto them either. They're going to arise and pass away subject to causes and conditions, just like the unpleasant ones. And this is a very important thing to understand, that Buddhism isn't about just getting the pleasant, because we have to learn to let go of the pleasant as well. The renunciation, the letting go, isn't just about letting go of the things we don't like. It's letting go of the things that we like as well. But again, it's not forcibly letting go, wrenching it out of our grasp. It's starting to see with wisdom that the pleasant experiences don't belong to me either. And the suffering comes when I do try to grasp them and make them solid. So maybe you'll work with a shadow that's about the things that you enjoyed and wish you still had. Yes. Have any comments or questions? Well, I think we'll end now. I'd just like to introduce Sister Jitendriya to you. Obviously, you will have noticed there's two of us up here tonight, which is a very pleasant change. And Sister Jitendriya is staying at the nuns' monastery, Dharmasara, at the moment. She is from Sydney originally, born in Sydney, on the other side of the harbour from where I was born. And she went to England 11 years ago to practice in the community of Achan Sumedho at Amaravati. And she's just taking time now to do some more intensive solitary practice. So we're very lucky that she's been able to come to Perth and spend some time at Dharmasara. And she'll be there right through until the rains retreat. So I'll be going away to England for 3 weeks from next week. But Sister Jitendriya will be there throughout that whole time. So I want to emphasise to all of you who come to bring Dana and who do like to come up to the nuns' monastery that she will be there and will be able to receive your dana each day. And it will be a very nice opportunity for those of you who do like to go up to the nuns' monastery to go and speak with another nun who's had a lot of experience in the community, and also in looking after her father when he was dying. You may have met Sister Jitendriya during that time because she was staying in Sydney and made a few trips over here to Perth to have some time in the monastery during that episode in her life. And she's also had experience in the community, the new monastery in America. So she's travelled quite a bit in the last couple of years, and perhaps anyone who's got questions about the English communities or life in the nuns community in England would be happy to have a talk with her. So we'll both be down here all this weekend, and if any of you would particularly like to speak with Sister Jitendriya, she'll be available after the dharanas on Saturday and Sunday, and then up until the rains she'll be up at Dharmasara for those who would like to go and see her there. So thank you, James, if you'd like to make the announcement.